And then Prishadra came to know this. When Prishadra came to know this, he took a sword in his hand and followed the tiger. Unfortunately, when he finally approached the tiger, he could not distinguish between the cow and the tiger in the dark, and thus he killed the cow. Because of this, his spiritual master cursed him to take birth in a Shudra family. But Prishadra practiced Mr. Yoga, and in Bhakti Yoga, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then he voluntarily entered a blazing forest fire, thus relinquishing his material body and going back home back to Godhead. Kavi, the youngest son of Manu, was a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead from his very childhood. For Manu's son, known as Karusha, a sect of Kshatriyas known as Karushas was generated. Manu also had a son known as Drishta, from whom another sect of Kshatriyas was generated. But although they were born for one who had the qualities of a Kshatriya, they became Brahmanas. From Nriga, another son of Manu, came the sons of grandsons known as Sumuti, Bhutta, Yoti, and Vasu. From Vasu, in succession, came Pratika, and from him came Oghavan, descending in order from the seminal dynasty of Narishanta, another son of Manu, where Chitrasena, Riksha, Mithun, Purna, Indrasena, Vitihotra, Satyabrava, Urushrava, Devadatta, and Agnivesha. From the Kshatriya known as Agnivesha came the celebrated Brahmana dynasty known as Agnivesayana. From the seminal dynasty of Dishta, another son of Manu came Nabhaga, and from him in succession came Balavdana, Vatsapriti, Pramshu, Pramati, Kanitra, Shakshusha, Vibhinshati, Rambha, Kaninetra, Karandhama, Avikshit, Maruta, Dama, Rajardhana, Suhriti, Nara, Kevala, Dundumon, Vegavan, Buddha, and Trinavindu. In this way, many sons and grandsons were born in this dynasty. From Trinavindu came a daughter named Ilavila, from whom Kuvera took birth. Trinavindu also had three sons named Vishala, Sunyavandu, and Dhumraketu. The son of Vishala was Hemachandra, his son was Dharmuraksha, and his son was Sanyama. The sons of Sanyama were Devaja, Krishaswa's son, Samadatta, performed an Ashwashamedha sacrifice, and by worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu, he achieved this supreme perfection of going back home back to Godhead. Om Agyanath Mirandasya Agyanam Ganath Shalakaya Shakshuru Militan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurubhaya Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manavishtam Stavitam Jena Vittale Sarin Rupakaram Hindarati Svapadam Hukam Pancha Kalpatar Vishchakrupa Sindhu Vyayva Chapitanam Parnu Yavishnu Vyayani Munaha. So, this is the continuation of the first chapter. The opening slokas of this second chapter. Now, we should remember that this canto is entitled Liberation. And it's very significant because in the preface to the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada makes a point that whoever can study the Srimad Bhagavatam from the first canto all the way to the ninth canto, one verse after another, one chapter after another, Prabhupada said that by the end of studying the ninth canto, that person will become a self-realized soul. Not only that, but Prabhupada also said that whoever can accomplish that will be able to withstand all the arguments put forth by the materialists and by the atheists in regards to the non-existence of the Lord. So we're almost there. We just started the ninth canto, but we're almost there. So by the end of this ninth canto, we we set the stage, or Prabhupada set the stage, for the 10th canto, which is the actual depiction, the actual narrations of Krishna's personal leelas. As we will see, we have a glimpse of what's of this coming attractions of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam in the Krishna book. The Krishna book gives us a summary study of the activities, the transcendental activities of Krishna, as we will find in the 10th canto. So for those of you who have steadily stuck to this program of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we are almost there. So in this opening slokas of these first three slokas of the second chapter, we completed the first chapter by seeing that King Sudumna, who had the bad karma of changing bodies every month, he finally said, you know, I'm an old man, I should give this kingdom to my son. He passed on the responsibilities to his son, and he took off to the forest as a vanaprastha person to pursue his spiritual life. Now, in this opening slokas, it is said that Prishadra, who was a descendant of Sudumna, had some kind of a bad incident, because he, in good faith, he wanted to protect the cow that was taken by this tiger, but instead of killing the tiger, ended up killing the cow. Now, the story is elaborated upon later on, and I will leave that for the other speakers. But what is significant in this purport that Srila Prabhupada gives to the third sloka is that of the animals being slaughtered. And this is very significant because, as we know, in our Krishna conscious movement, we made a vow of not eating meat. But it so happens that we live in a society that thrives upon animals killing. In fact, it's not just a society, it's a whole civilization. And everywhere you go, not only in this continent, but also in even back all the way to the old world. You go to Europe, you go to Middle East, you go to even India, actually you'll find animal killing. Even though in India, for example, the Hindus may not eat cow meat, but they do eat other animals, goats, chickens. So we can understand that even though the Hindu civilization is a quite quasi-Vedic civilization, almost Vedic civilization, still the contamination of eating meat has infiltrated. Basically, you find not a country on this planet right now, not one country in which animal killing and animal eating is forbidden by law. So we can understand that this is a full-fledged Kali Yuga, in which the four sinful activities are very prominent. Sinful activities like meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, intoxication. So I was reading a few days ago one of Prabhupada's conversations. He said that of all the sinful activities, one of the most difficult to give up is meat eating. Even worse than illicit sex. I mean, people can do away with, you know, illicit sex, but hardly they can give up meat eating. And one may ask, why is this so prominent? Why is people so attached to this? Why is it so pervading? It's all over the place. Everywhere you go is meat eating going on. And one reason is that this sinful activity actually comes from certain scriptures, from the Jewish scriptures. And as we should remember that we live in a society, or actually we live in a civilization that is based upon two things, America even, American civilization, if we can call it like that, is based upon Judaism and based on Greek civilization, and to some extent Roman civilization. But the idea of eating meat, as Prabhupada also explained in one of the purports that we were reading in Chaitanya Charitamrita a few weeks ago, and it is in the story of the on the Chankasi, the passing with Lord Chaitanya. Chankasi was debating with Lord Chaitanya about cow eating. And Chankasi said, you know, it's right there in our scriptures, it's in the Quran, we can eat meat, we can eat the cow. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, responded in that debate that how can you eat your own mother? The cow is giving you milk, she's feeding you, she doesn't require much, she just eats grass. And you come and take the meal throughout her life, and in the end you kill her and eat her body. So very, very convincing arguments. But for a person who is immersed in such a sinful activity, they don't see like it's a big deal. So that's the color of ignorance. And actually that potency of not eating, that instruction, not eating meat, is very interesting. Back many years ago when I was distributing books, we was distributing this book called Elevation to Krishna Consciousness. And somehow or other, I came across one individual and he told me, you know, this little book that you guys sold me months ago, you know, this book turned me into a vegetarian. And I was thinking, but then he said, but the only thing I can eat is boiled potatoes and boiled carrots. I don't know what to cook. So we sold him a higher taste. So he was happy. But I was thinking, that instruction of Srila Prabhupada in his books carries the potency of, say, you know, meat eating is sinful. So many people actually can give up the bad habit of eating meat by the simple instruction found in Prabhupada's books, by distribution of these books. This is the only way we can stop it. There's no other way it's like in this case, this Kshatriya, Prishadra, he himself got a sword and went to protect the cows, you know, chased the tiger away. And but now it's not just the tigers. Now it's everyone eating meat. So how can we go to the slaughterhouses, you know, with swords and or M16s, you know, and protect the cows? You can't do that. Because not everybody's doing it. Not just the tigers, even the human beings. See, Vedic civilization is very interesting in terms of how they classify people. I was telling this to my brother. I was preaching to my brother not to eat meat. And I told him that in Vedic civilization, we classify people according to what they eat. You have the Chandalas who eat dog meat. And then he freaked out when he heard that. But I said, you know, the Chinese, they eat dogs. You go to Thailand, you go to China, many areas in the Far East, you see, you know, dead dogs hanging. Like people, they have, you know, chicken hangings here. Dead chickens hanging over there, they have dogs hanging. And so I was telling him that, you know, that name for it, there's a Sanskrit name for it, there's Chandalas, dog eaters. And we also have a name for people who eat other people. They are the Rakshasas. In fact, in this ninth canto, we're going to come to the story of Lord Ram. Briefly, it's going to be explained in this passage to Lord Ramachandra. And one of the features of, one of the attributes of the Rakshasa race is that they not only eat meat, any kind of meat, but they also eat human flesh, among other things. Another symptom by which you can recognize a Rakshasa is that they like to pollute women, especially women of other men. And that's the whole story of the Ramayana, that Ravana made the wrong move for trying to pollute Sita. So Vedic civilization is like that. We classify people according to what they do and what they eat. according to behavior. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Krishna declares what are the attributes of Brahmins, what are the attributes of the Kshatriyas, and the Vaishyas and the Sudras. And so we can tell, this type of things. Going back to the story here, so this king, this Kshatriya, he went to protect the cows from these tiger attacks. And in our movement, we have attempted to protect cows. And actually, protection of cows is not a duty of the Kshatriyas. It's actually a duty of the Vaishyas, according to the Bhagavad Gita anyway. But the Kshatriyas sometimes get involved because Vaishyas are not allowed to carry weapons in Vedic civilization. It's not like, you know, like here in America, the right to bear arms thing, you know, like any Sudra can carry a weapon. Whereas in the Vedic civilization, Varnashram system, only the Kshatriyas can carry weapons. But the Kshatriyas have a clear mandate. They have the duty to protect the citizens. You can tell that in modern civilization, if everyone has the right to bear arms, that means that's a symptom of degradation, because the Kshatriyas are not able to protect the citizens. And so the citizens have to carry weapons around. So in this sense, the duty of the Kshatriyas is to protect all the citizens, and that includes the animals. Animal killing is allowed in Vedic system only for the purpose of sacrifices. Just like in the opening summary of the chapter, we read that an Ashwamedha was performed. And so that involved that involves animal killing, but anything other than that, no animal killing is allowed. Now, how you convince people of this sublime principle of nonviolence? It is very hard, because again, according to Srila Prabhupada, giving up meat eating is not an easy thing for people to do. And unless we have not only we practice it ourselves, but also, you know, but also the ability and the means to propagate this Krishna consciousness movement, to participate in the propagation of the Krishna consciousness movement, there's no hope. There's nothing else we can do to stop this animal slaughter. In fact, a few weeks ago, Indradyumna Swami was giving a lecture, and he was quoting Srila Prabhupada, stating that the two world wars that human society experienced in the last century, First World War and Second World War, Prabhupada gave an explanation that is due to the animal killing in the slaughterhouses. And Maharaj was making the point that, according to Prabhupada's explanation, prior to the 20th century, prior to the 1900s, people used to eat meat, but not in the scale that they did in the 20th century, in which they established the slaughterhouses. One of the curses that the Industrial Revolution brought to the world is the animal killing. You're talking massive animal killing. You know, because with machines they can, I mean, even nowadays, the way they milk the cows in this country is all based on, you know, machinery. So Prabhupada said that because of that establishment of slaughterhouses in such an unprecedented quantities, that is why the reactions was First World War and then Second World War, which were, I mean, untold number of human beings died. In the millions, and countries got devastated. I mean, if you look at Europe in the First World War, because when you send people to war, is you send in, you know, the young people. Actually, even in Germany in the Second World War, when they ran out of young people, they started sending the old folks, the old timers, the Russians too, probably. I don't know. So war is just the manifestation of this social karma that is involved in maintaining animals' slaughterhouses. And so we should expect that sooner or later human society is going to have another shock because of the animals killing in unprecedented numbers. In fact, it has been discovered that the current environmental problems that we're having, you know, the ozone depletion and, you know, global warming and all this stuff, it's also to a greater extent due to animal farming. Again, that's tied to the slaughterhouses. Just like McDonald's, for example, the big American company McDonald's, they have to, in order for them to have cheap meat all over the world, beef actually, what they have to do is they have to contract farmers in Brazil and destroy the rainforest to keep mini cows so they can slaughter them. But they had discovered that because of the animal manure that is produced in these huge farming animal farms for meat consumption, because of that, the ozone layer is getting depleted even more. It's not just the cars, actually. It's also the unprecedented quantity of animals being maintained for slaughterhouses. So we see that, you know, that is creating a disturbance in the environment, and everybody's getting, you know, the side effects of that disturbance. And because of the ozone layer depletion, people are having more and more cancers, skin cancers. So any way you look at it, it's pretty bad. So how do we convince people that this is all bad? That it's actually not only bad, but it's also sinful. That's a big challenge. Because what you're telling them is that not only you're telling them that they're doing it wrong, but the justification that they find in their own scriptures is also wrong. So the Chankasi, when he was trying to debate Lord Chaitanya that he was allowed to eat meat because it wasn't the Quran actually, the teachings of the Quran came from the Hebrew teachings, and the Christian teachings come from the Hebrew teachings. So if you look at it, the proposal of Srila Prabhupada to annihilate meat eating goes to the core of the civilizations in which we are living. It's not just simply a fad of the 1960s and the 70s to be a vegetarian. It's really, when Prabhupada said no meat eating, what he really means is you really have to negate, you really have to somehow or other go to the core of the issue, which is to people's own scriptures, because that's the only justification that they find. When you ask a lot of people, you know, to give up meat eating, they say, well, the Bible says I can eat meat, so I'll eat meat. So, and that's pretty hard, because you're telling them, then the Bible may be wrong. You have to pay for this. People still have to pay for their sins. Whether it's in the Bible, whether it's in the Torah, whether it's in the Quran, this meat eating still has major reactions. So when we are preaching Krishna consciousness, we should understand that we are not only asking to, you know, people to give up meat eating, but other sinful activities as well. But we are trying to change the world here. The Krishna consciousness movement is not really just for us, you know, to hang around here and come and enjoy spiritual life every morning. But it actually is to change the world. It's actually to change the world all the way through, from beginning to end. It is a revolution, actually. Like Prabhupada said, it is a cultural revolution. And it's a civilizational revolution. We are trying to change the whole civilization. I mean, even India, if you look at India, because of their, as a country, because they've been dominated by different cultures and different civilizations, the British, the Mughals, the Muslims. So India has become a little bit, you know, topsy-turvy. In India, of course, people don't eat cows, not the Hindus anyway, although the Muslims do eat cows. But India should be, if anywhere in the world there should be a prohibition against cow eating, should be in India, legally, for anybody who wants to reside in India. But still, because of the weakness of the politicians, you know, that has been allowed in India now, those slaughterhouses. So the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we are participating in a movement which is not only a spiritual movement, but actually it has something to contribute to the betterment of society in terms of, I mean, even karma, social karma. If sooner or later another world war has to come because of the animal slaughters, the slaughterhouses, and the only way to prevent this is by preaching Krishna consciousness, by distributing these books all over the world. These books are really the basis. These books, Prabhupada's books, are really the only thing we can do, distributing them. There's nothing else we can do. It's just distributing books as much as we can, as many as we can, to as many people as we can. This is the only way. This is the only way we got change ourselves, most of us anyway, by reading Prabhupada's books. The potency of changing the world, the potency of changing hearts, is in Prabhupada's books. And that's why we should be very protective also of this Krishna consciousness movement. Sometimes people come and try to belittle Srila Prabhupada. But if we think about it, I mean, the contribution that Prabhupada gave to the world, not only to us, but to the world, in this literary output that he did, in these writings, is, it carried so much meaning, it carried so much significance to everyone in all levels, spiritual, you know, spiritual level, in our own psychological level, in our material well-being, just taking care of the body, taking care of society, avoiding sinful activities. This avoidance of sinful activities, not only individually, we ourselves, but also as a society. This is why when we join the Krishna Consciousness Movement, we cannot take these things lightly. And we should know why we're here. A lot of the times, I remember when I joined ISKCON, you know, when you're young, you don't know that much about life, right? So I was lucky that I joined ISKCON, so I would end up somewhere else. But anyway, it took a while before these things clicked in, you know. It's like after you read and read and read again and listen to the other devotees reading, coming to the Srimad Bhagavatam class is such a crucial aspect of the spiritual life, actually. Because it's the way we understand things. Of course, we also have the cultural aspect of Krishna consciousness, in which, you know, we have the music, we have the drama, we have other artistic output that we have in ISKCON. But if we do not understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, then, you know, we're just doing this just because we like it. I mean, there is some benefit, there's a spiritual benefit to it. But we should understand why we are in the Krishna consciousness movement. And why are we asked to participate in the Krishna consciousness movement? So anyway, I'll stop here. Any comments, questions? Madan Mohan Prabhu.
I've noticed a lot of times when you have a discussion, anybody has discussions, it goes into kind of like a mental competition on you say what we say, and it's not that effective. But one of the things that I've noticed that is highly effective is prasadam,
yeah,
distribution. Just like that person said, well, boiled potatoes, and, right, you know, that's, and maybe a salad. So when we have prasadam, it demonstrates that not only is it not just boiled potatoes, but this is wonderful. And if you give someone something better, then it, because when you mentioned that's the hardest thing to give up, I didn't even think of that. I mean, I thought that was like a free one that they threw in. That because Prashadam is just so wonderful, I never had another thought about anything else after taking Prashadam. So when we do the Prashadam distribution, in fact, in sometimes in the past, I remember we used to have cooking classes. We used to be very proactive with having people. Of course, we got a little bit of a boon from the medical and the health industry nowadays, people recognizing how everybody's turning into these over consumption of this junk food, what it's doing to them. So we get a little boon from that. But Prashadam, besides just the spiritual benefit, of course, it's many different things, but that idea that it gives them a higher taste.
Absolutely. That used to be one of our main programs, preaching programs, years ago. Probably not a lot, but in Gainesville they do have it. In other big centers, big cities, cooking classes are a very important part of the preaching. Because, I mean, you're right. I mean, we distribute the books and people get the message. But then from there to actually sticking to the vow of not eating meat, it requires, that's why it requires the association of devotees. When people come to the centers, when people come to the temples, they are actually stepping into a place in which whatever it says in the books, that's what we are doing here. So we are living the scriptures. And prasadam is absolutely essential.
In fact, it used to be a practice where devotees used to invite non-devotees into their house and cook them and for dinner, like a more personal stage of preaching.
Right.
They saw how a devotee lives. They kind of sometimes, they're generally householders. They see the children are fairly well behaved. They're eating prasadam. They look strong and healthy, even though they didn't have as much protein as they were told that you needed to exist in science class.
Yeah, and actually, it's because of the, I believe, because of the prophets, because of the book distribution we have done over the years, over the decades. In America, it's becoming a very much acceptable way. Being a vegetarian is becoming a very acceptable, people are getting accepted being vegetarians. Back in the 70s, when I told my folks that I was going vegetarian, I mean, they hit the roof. They thought I was, you know, haywire or something. And so, but nowadays you find that, you know, the acceptance of being a vegetarian, it is all because of Prabhupada's massive book distribution we have done. I mean, no, this is the only way you can explain historically why today, in the late 1990s, you know, in the first decade of the 21st century, people are still accepting more and more this nonviolence against animals. I mean, at one point in time, I was reading a long time ago, history of American political history. In America, you were considered a communist if you were a vegetarian in the 60s. You were considered a communist, subversive of some kind. But that is because the young people back then, you know, were embracing this principle of nonviolence. But nonviolence is such a sublime practice. Even the meat eaters understand that the value of not being nonviolent towards animals. And there are nowadays certain groups. It's a PETA, PETA, you know, some kind of group that they want people to treat animals with some kind of understand, even though they're getting slaughtered anyway, but they still don't want unnecessary suffering for animals. And then you got the Greenpeace, and then you got, you know, people who are protecting the whales, but nobody's protecting the cows. This is the amazing thing. They got things to protect the dogs, they got societies to protect the cats, but nobody's protecting the cows. Yes, Mataji? Mother?
you. I think your point of understanding the philosophy of why is very taken, because I've noticed that people can become vegetarians for a certain amount of time and then they can revert back to meat eating because they don't have that, you know, that deep philosophical understanding. And also trends can change. I know Boulder is a very energetic spot for all kinds of higher consciousness, but they're started to enter in different reasons why, you know, maybe you should rethink this vegetarian way of life. So if the media and all these things start turning, it can also go, but if you understand from the core of it, then that really reinforces the philosophy. That's a good, very good point.
Mother Mahamaya.
Hare Krishna, in my Christmas business, I'm very well aware how much people love their pets. I mean, they just, you know, anyway, I've just seen displays of amazing, you know, seemingly love for their, especially dogs. And so a point in preaching that we can make is comparing the fact that in this country, I believe there's laws against cruelty to dogs and cats. But there's no laws for other animals. So I was reading an article. There's a magazine at the back of the temple here that's produced in San Diego called 16 Rounds to Samadhi. And there's a very short and very brilliant article by Hridaya Nandamaraj about this point of animal rights, saying how in our society, because if we see value to ourselves, like these pets are cuddly and sweet and we get some enjoyment from them, so we give them rights. But then the other animals we don't give rights. He's comparing that to in Roman days, you know, the emperor would give thumbs up or thumbs down if someone's to live or die. And he's saying that we're doing the same thing with giving certain animals rights, thumbs up, and other animals, thumbs down.
Right.
So, you know, if we can bring this into our preaching, I think...
Absolutely.
You know, it'll help.
Yes, Mother Bhaktilata.
Yes, you say that... it's more difficult to give up eating meat than illicit sex. But my understanding is the binding force that keeps us in this world is illicit sex. So why would eating meat be less, more difficult?
I guess Prabhupada was explaining it in terms of practical, you know, to get people involved in, when he was preaching, to get people attracted to the movement, to get people involved in the mission of Krishna consciousness. For people, it was harder to meat eating than the, and even for some of his followers eventually, I mean. So, I have seen devotees who went back to eating meat. And that was pretty sad. I mean, I have seen former ISKCON members, I should say, because a devotee, unless he's cursed, and he can't withstand the curse, you know, that eating meat is pretty bad. I mean, going back to, after you have practiced Krishna consciousness and you know, tasted prasad, like Madan Mohan was saying, you know, not only there is a spiritual value in Krishna prasadam, but it's also, it's actually tasty. Of course, when you keep growing older, what used to be good 10, 20 years ago, it's not good anymore, but it's still prasadam, you know,
One of the things that I've heard about the origins of the massive slaughter of animals was it kind of coincided with the introduction of the internal combustion engine.
Yeah, the Industrial Revolution.
And well, not necessarily Industrial Revolution, but you know, because you know they used to have like steam powered things and like that for factories, but when transportation and then basically there was nothing for, no use for the cows.
Right.
And if you, I remember seeing, it was a lithograph of the building of the Brooklyn Bridge. Mm-hmm. And in that you see oxen used for, you know, doing a lot of work there. And so really, you know, you could look at the the transportation industry as kind of like the seed of, well, right. Hey, you know, we got to do some of these, so let's just.
You see what happened, the Industrial Revolution brought a different perspective on how to use resources. And that's probably why not only the combustion engine contributed to that, but the Industrial Revolution brought a different perspective on how you can utilize resources in nature to produce goods. So in the eyes of these people, you know, having animals, I mean, they farm all kinds of animals. They farm fish, they farm all kinds of stuff. And unfortunately, they found a way of, you know, killing cows in millions. Somehow or other, we don't have it. And actually, if you look at it, if you analyze things, this is also the result of Indians' weakness in the world. As a political unit, as a political player in the world affairs. Because India, if of all the countries in the world, is India who really had the clout and the political power to say, you know, we're gonna set a different example to the world, how to protect animals. But India's not doing it. Why is that? Well, in this case, in the story that we are reading, you had strong Kshatriyas who knew their duty. And whereas in modern India, you don't have Kshatriyas leading the country. You have politicians. You have people who get elected. Again, you know, we go back to the point of Varnashram, which is another very revolutionary idea from Prabhupada's preaching. It's how we can introduce Varnashram to a civilization which is accustomed to appoint sudras as political leaders. It's really interesting because if you look at it, for example, the Islamic countries, Muslim countries, they actually use a lot of resources in protecting and promoting their religion. Believe it or not. Sorry? Their religion. But India is not doing it. The Jews do it, the Muslims do it, the atheists do it, but nobody's doing it for Krishna. Nobody's doing it. So it's kind of interesting that, you know, eventually Srila Prabhupada's, one of Prabhupada's big ideas in preaching was to establish centers in India, because hopefully India is going to wake up to this thing. Anyway, any other comments or questions? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada.